This hour, we've been exploring the issues of inequity and privilege. Now we want to focus the lens on policy. When policies are being designed, when policy agendas are being created, do privilege and inequity come into play? We're joined now by David Callahan, co-creator of the think tank Demos, and State Representative Rashida Tlaib, who represents the 6th District of Southwest Detroit. David, Representative, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
Thank you for having me.
David, I want to start with you. You're co-author of a report called Stacked Deck, and you looked at the intersection of politics and money. How did that relationship impact economic mobility?
Well, what we found in the report is things that are familiar to many people, which is that wealthy Americans vote at much higher rates. They're more likely to contact their representatives. They're more likely, of course, to give money to politicians. The donor class is made up primarily of people who are quite well off financially. And these people have a much larger voice in public policy and public policy outcomes. And as a result, policies that help ordinary Americans climb up the economic ladder often don't get as far in our political process as they might if we had a more representative democracy, because affluent Americans don't necessarily prioritize things like Pell grants for poor kids, or the earned income tax credit, or raising the minimum wage, and often actively oppose those kinds of policies.
Representative Tlaib, you represent a district that has some concentrated poverty. As a lawmaker, do you find it difficult to advocate for the people you represent to make sure their concerns are part of the policy discussion?
Absolutely. I agree with David in discussing the fact that there is such inequality when it comes to the weight of the voices of those that live in poverty and those that don't. And it is very difficult because their voices are drowned by people that have money that can hire so-called lobbyists or be part of special interest groups. And yes, their priorities are extremely different from those that are in poorer communities that want to focus on quality education for their children, focusing on tax relief, like the earned income tax credit provided for those that lived in poverty.
This idea of America as an egalitarian place where everyone has a shot at success, it continues to prevail to some degree. But according to the Demos report, David, that's not reflected in our public policy. Expand a bit on why that is. Where is the breakdown?
Well, a big problem or a big finding of our report is that, we all know that the wealthy are more likely to give money to politicians and more likely to vote. What our report, though, did is shine light on another very important fact, which is that the wealthy often have different public policy preferences than ordinary Americans. So it's not only that they have more power in the political process, but they want different things. So, for example, raising the minimum wage is overwhelmingly backed by a majority of the public. The wealthy are not so keen on it because many of them have businesses. Support for higher education, ensuring that anybody who wants to go to college can afford to do so with government assistance, is overwhelmingly popular among Americans. It's less popular among the wealthy. So, when you have this affluent class with so much clout in our political system, and they have different views than what many ordinary Americans want, that creates some outcomes that are not so great in terms of helping people get up the economic ladder.
You're listening to State of Opportunity on Michigan Radio. Give us a call, 866-255-2762. Have you experienced a shift in income or wealth that changed the way you think about policies that affect low-income families? You can also send us a comment on the State of Opportunity Facebook page or tweet us at State of Op, that's with two P's. David, is this dynamic apparent at every level of government, federal, state, and municipal?
You could see this play out in different places. Certainly you can see it play out at the state level, and certainly you can see it playing out in Michigan. I mean, just look at somebody like the Governor Snyder, who is, a business executive, former venture capitalist, worth $200 million, a guy who spent $6 million on his own campaign and is so wealthy that he takes $1 a year in salary. Well, you know, most Americans could not afford to work for free. So somebody like that has a very – may have a very different mindset in terms of what – of how to you know, ensure opportunity than, say, your average working person.
So, Representative, as a lawmaker, do you find yourself trying to start policy discussions that aren't necessarily on the radar of other policymakers?
You know, one of the problems in watching our state and the state of Michigan become even poorer is to see the shift on priorities, and is just like David said, because those that are wealthier or well off have different kind of priorities or goals. And today there is more tax relief in the state of Michigan under Governor Snyder's leadership for corporations versus Michigan residents. Today, as we speak, as people are filing their Michigan income tax returns, they're noticing a few hundred dollars missing from the refund. Instead of it going up, it's going down because the tax burden is now on Michigan families versus corporations. We see the fight in Lansing right now in trying to fight for paid sick days. And you see the Michigan Restaurant Association, people that own businesses with, you know, a few hundred employees fighting to prevent paid sick days and prevent opportunities for fair collective bargaining. And we see the fight even with income tax credit, which in many, many communities has been the most successful anti-poverty programs in the nation, is the Earned Income Tax Credit. And that has been completely eliminated. So the shift has been done in regards to how we are trying to address the issues with Michigan families. But one of the key areas that I believe that needs to have a microscope on is education. In poorer communities and neighborhoods, especially in my backyard, I see more crowded classrooms, children without books. You know, there's experiments going on right now with our school district and creating these alternative school districts that may or may not be held accountable to parents that might be concerned about those lack of resources. And so there's a lot of debate in Lansing that's being drowned by folks that do have resources and money and can hire lobbyists, where that senior citizen or that family of four that is struggling every single check, every single disability check, are struggling every single day to pay their bills, struggling every single day to even have the strength to pick up the phone and call me and say, fight harder, get us the resources we need. This is getting out of control. So it's a very difficult situation for many folks like myself that was elected in communities that are struggling so much.
David, I found it interesting in the report. You looked at whether it mattered which political party was in power. What did you find?
Well, in general, the incomes for ordinary Americans have grown faster under Democratic presidents than Republican presidents over the past 50 years. That's a finding of Larry Bartels, who's one of the leading political scientists in the nation, who we draw on his research in our report. I do want to come back to this question of you know, who's at the table. I think that the debate over the minimum wage, you know, the president has called for raising the minimum wage, and that's now, you know, before Congress. What we've seen in the minimum wage fight again and again is that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is one of the biggest spenders on lobbying in the Capitol, is very vigorously opposed to the minimum wage, any increases in the minimum wage. And meanwhile, those people who groups who want the minimum wage to go up tend to, you know, groups that advocate for the working poor. Labor unions tend to have far fewer resources to deploy in the political system, which is one reason why our minimum wage has lagged so far behind over the past 30 years.
I wanted to bring someone into the conversation, but it sounds like we just lost the call. But I will ask the question anyway. The question was whether or not if the people who are not being represented were better organized, would that make a difference? David, I'll ask you first, and I also want your feedback, Representative.
Well, certainly. I mean, you know, if people get organized, they can affect change. The problem is that our political system keeps tilting more and more in the favor of big money, you know, especially after the Citizens United decision. So a single donor in the 2012 election cycle, Sheldon Adelson, gave more money than the residents of 12 U.S. states put together. Well, you know, if you have one guy who has as big of a voice in our political system than the residents of 12 entire states, I mean, that just shows you how stacked the deck really is.
Representative Tlaib, what do you hear from your constituents? Are they able to be involved in these discussions, or are their day-to-day lives just, it's too much right now for them to try to worry about what's happening in Lansing?
You know, sometimes it is too much, but one big success in showing the power of the one vote, because that's one thing that they cannot replace. No amount of money can replace that one vote, because if you are a rich voter or a poor voter, that vote is weighed the same way. And when residents were pushing for environmental justice issue in Southwest Detroit, yes, I had to get more partners and people to help me transport, you know, provide transportation for them to get to Lansing. But even when they got there, it was trying to empower them that they did have a voice. And just because, you know, folks there that had suits and ties on and, you know, looked a little different, that they would not be heard. But they were so surprised to see the power that they had as soon as they spoke into the microphone in the committee hearing, and how receptive people were to see the tens and thousands of people that did end up showing up because we provided access to transport, because we said this had to be done, because it's a partnership. When I go out there and fight for the residents I represent, it's not as powerful as if 10 or 15 of my residents are next to me and they're as loud as I am about why there's such injustice in our education system, why that polluting industry has to be next to our poor neighborhoods versus areas where there isn't homes. And so there is a struggle, though, in empowering residents that are finding or feeling demoralized, feeling defeated, feeling that their voice might be not heard because of the fact of their class.
David, when we talk about the policies that are being enacted, are the middle class benefiting from those policies, or is this something that's limited to just low-income families, or are people who are not wealthy being negatively impacted by policies that are going into place?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think a great example is the cuts to higher education that have been taking place in states across the country, including in Michigan, which has sharply cut funding for higher education. And, you know, as tuition goes up for public universities, a lot of middle-class families find themselves struggling to pay and end up, you know, kids end up going into debt to pay for public universities that used to be, you know, practically free a generation ago. And so you have, I mean, the higher education has traditionally been a really important path into the middle class. And as those cuts are made, it becomes a more difficult path to travel. Meanwhile, in many places, including Michigan, we've seen very large tax breaks to corporations, even as these higher ed cuts are happening. And that suggests, you know, priorities which are really out of whack with what most middle-class people might want.
Representative Tlaib, your constituents, they are families who live below the poverty line, families that are on the economic bubble. We're talking about kids who can't vote but who live in poverty. What does all of this mean for them from your viewpoint as a lawmaker?
You know, one of the first things that comes out of my mouth in a committee when we're fighting for more funding for education, because we've had some of the largest cuts, not only to higher education, but K through 12. We've seen such defunding of education in Michigan that it's causing tremendous, what I call, potholes in our education system that's going to push people more back into poverty. And these children don't have what we call, you know, special interest groups or lobbyists out there fighting for them. What this is going to mean, it's going to be harder for us to help children that are living in poverty. And I can tell you, as a person as has lived in poverty, you know, being the eldest of 14, child of immigrants, I lived in a poor neighborhood, struggled day to day in regards to trying to figure out how we were going to survive, and it was education and access to quality education and the investment that was being done to education from K through 12 and even making it affordable. Especially, I was a product of Pell Grants. And I don't think any success story you've heard out there of somebody that lived or came from a poor community or came from a poor family, their success is always based on their access to education, quality education. And those children are going to pay the price. And the biggest unfunded liability that Michigan can ever create is a generation of undereducated children. And when you see the rate of folks in correction systems, 70% of those in corrections right now are high school dropouts. If that's not telling of the fact that folks that are wealthier, folks that are middle class, if they don't think that this is going to impact them in the long run, it will, because guess who's going to have to pay for it? We all will have to pay for all of those increases in corrections budgeting and some of the other issues that go with it. So I absolutely think that it is critical that we prioritize our budget in the state of Michigan, where we focus primarily on fixing the broken education system that we have in the state of Michigan. And I believe that could be the best way in getting folks out of poverty.
David, we've got just about 20 seconds. Is there a 20-second answer to how we balance out these policy priorities?
Well, an important thing to do in broad strokes is get big money out of the political process and get more little people in. You know, if we had a political process where more people voted, everyone participated, and fewer big donors had such clout, I think that we would get a set of public policies that were more favorable to the middle class.
David Callahan is co-creator of the think tank Demos, and Rashida Tlaib is a Democrat representing Michigan's 6th District in the State House. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.